William, do you believe then that this bloodline is what we have been calling now the Illuminati, that other special group?
Well, I think that's certainly a possibility. When you look up the word Illuminati in Webster's dictionary, it talks about a definition of Illuminati as a newly baptized initiate. And in this regard, George, you really popped the question a moment ago when you asked the question, why does this movie and book matter? And in my view, if I can comment on it briefly, that movie theaters are our new temples. They are the new myth factories. And what happens to people when they go see the Da Vinci Code movie is they are in the hands of an illumined one, Dan Brown, Ron Howard. And what they are being introduced to are symbols and their meanings, which are central to the Da Vinci Code. In fact, this movie successfully has introduced the Gnostic language of symbols to the masses. This is the code of the Illuminati, and millions upon millions of people are simultaneously being initiated in the hidden meaning of Illuminati symbols such as the fleur-de-lis, the Rose of Venus, the Fibonacci sequence, the chalice and the blade, the caduceus. And what this is going to do, the result of this unveiling of symbolism, is going to be an incredible insurgence in the enlightenment of this planet. People are studying Kabbalah, the Gnostic Gospels, and mystic factions of religions like there's no tomorrow. In fact, there may be no tomorrow. And I think that's sort of what people are sensing here, and that we are in the hands of people that are trying to bring about an awakening on this planet. And if you subscribe to this notion that there's a positive side of the Illuminati that seeks to up-level humankind, even to the level of the gods, as I do, I think we're in the hands of a group that is attempting to promote this advancement of human enlightenment.
Lawrence, you agree with that?
I don't think I could improve on it at all, George.
Do you all believe also, though, that Jesus died, as opposed to some who think that maybe he went off to Egypt or India or any place else? Glenn, let's start with you on that.
Well, I think the rumors that Jesus did not die on the cross are greatly overrated. They largely come from the Talmud Emmanuel. Eusebius records a letter dictated by Christ where he said, at the invitation of those royal family members in Kashmir, he said, I will not come again, but I will send another in my place. The one he sent in his place was his little look-alike brother Thomas. And when Thomas got into India after the death of Christ, he was often mistaken for Christ. He looked like him, he sounded like him, he was performing miracles like him. And some people often confused him for him. And by the way, the apocryphal Acts of Thomas, the stories of his post-crucifixion ministry, is the largest apocryphal book that survives in the world. There are those who say that he was taken down from the cross alive. I don't believe Cassius Longinus was incompetent. I think he was a surgical assassin who had killed many people on the cross. I know that there are people who, and I'm sure Sir Lawrence would perhaps disagree with me, and it would be one of the few things, Sir Lawrence, that we would disagree on, because I have such great reverence for you. I think Jesus did die on the cross. The scenario of the Messiah was that he would be born of virgin birth, that he would heal the sick, raise the dead, die on the cross, and be resurrected, and I think Christ fulfilled that to the letter.
Lawrence, you believe that?
No, I think, as Glenn rightly said, it's one of those things we'll agree to disagree on. Although, I mean, having said that, you know, our opinions don't mean a great deal. I really think that the only way to look at this is to look at what is said, again, in the original documentation or the closest documentation that we can get our hands on. And in terms of the crucifixion, that is the New Testament and the Gospels. Now, one of the most interesting stories about the writing of the Gospels initially, I mean, whoever wrote the four that we have at whatever periods in time, what we do know is that in the oldest copies of them that survive, there is no story about a crucifixion or a resurrection. That was positively added in the 4th century. What we have is a sequence of events, just like the Roman annals, which leads us to the point where Jesus is sentenced to crucifixion, and that's sort of where it stops. Now, following that, if we then tag in the gospel story, we have a situation where Jesus is placed on the cross. There's a little bit of disagreement about how many hours he was up there, but it was only a few hours, 3 hours or 6 hours or whatever. And then we have this situation where Joseph of Arimathea goes to Pontius Pilate and he says, look, according to the book of Deuteronomy, it's the Sabbath coming up and you can't leave him hanging there on the Sabbath. Mm-hmm. He has to be taken down by law and subjected to Jewish death sentence. Mm-hmm. And now Jewish death sentence was burial alive. Crucifixion was Roman. Mm. So they take him down and they bury him alive. So we know from that that he was alive at the moment he was brought down. And the word that's used in the Bible refers to a body, not to a corpse. It just says they took his body down. Now, following that, I mean, if we can sort of leap ahead, what never seems to get taught very much by the church is the content of the Acts of the Apostles. We learn about the Gospels, but we don't learn much about the Acts. And the Acts are a total continuation from the Gospels. They're the next chapter, really. And what they tell is the story where Jesus is seemingly resurrected, mm-hmm. and Thomas doesn't believe him, and he says, well, I'm as real as you are. Look, for goodness sake, get your finger, stick it in this hole in my hand or whatever. I'm real. And he touches him, and he's real. Now, the rest of the Acts of the Apostles is really stories of Jesus going to this place and going to that place. And the church teaches that actually these are all visionary scenarios. But that's not the way it's presented. It says, you know, the word of John says in the beginning of his gospel that Jesus was called the Word of God. And it keeps telling us, Jesus, the Word of God was here. Jesus, the Word of God was there. So it doesn't actually say that it was visionary at all. We then come to the thing which the Catholic Church calls the Ascension, which actually isn't talked about in the Bible as the Ascension at all. It's never called by that name. It simply says that Jesus was taken by the cloud to the kingdom of heaven. You know, well, that could mean anything. It's left very loose, actually. I mean, the Bible isn't actually that clear. It gives us a scenario that he was crucified, died, and resurrected. But it never really tells us that he died again. It just tells us that he went to the kingdom of heaven. Again, we have this interesting situation in the Dead Sea Scrolls, which explains that the great monastery at Merd was called the Kingdom of Heaven. And the Kingdom of Heaven was where dynastic fathers had to go for 3 or 6 years once their wives conceived and bore children. And here we have an interesting situation, because Jesus is seen to go to the kingdom of heaven 3 times. And 3 children are what we get our stories of coming out of that. Once he's there for 6 years, that's what they stipulate for a daughter. Twice he's there for 3 years, that's what they stipulate for sons.
Mm-hmm.
So we get from that the whole picture that ties in with other records that there were 2 sons and a daughter. And at no point do I get any, I mean, it doesn't matter what I believe or don't believe, but I don't get any indication from any of it that he was anything other than alive and up and running.